Welcome to Season 3 of the Spotlight Series, Don't Just Survive, Thrive. Season 1 was launched to help people through the pandemic by talking to a variety of experts about topics such as psychology, finance and health. Season 2 focused on more work-related issues, including HR, marketing and leadership. Now it is time for Season 3. Season 3 is centred on the IT industry, specifically tech startups. There are also career spotlights where I talk to senior IT people about the secrets to their impressive career journeys. My name is Nicholas Steele, founder of JJP Talent Solutions, an Australian IT recruitment company. For over 20 years, I've helped tech startups and innovative SMEs to attract, recruit, and retain technical talent. I hope you enjoy listening.
I am delighted to introduce Eli Harrell. Eli is the co-founder and chief of strategy at Valhalla.team. Valhalla helps tech companies build high-performing teams which create products with purpose. Eli, thank you for joining me on Season 3, Episode 24 of the Spotlight Series, Don't Just Survive, Thrive.
Thank you so much, Nicola, for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Thank you, and thank you very much for being involved. So, Eli, tell me a bit more about your background and your career so far.
Sure, I'll give you kind of a quick overview from the way I see my past. From the U.S., I was born on the West Coast, but moved to the East Coast when I was a kid. So I kind of grew up in the Atlanta, Georgia area in the Southeast. Mm-hmm. And a bit of an unusual upbringing because my parents... they had 8 kids and I was the oldest of them. I still am.
Wow.
And I wasn't really put on the typical employment path. Education to employment path because we were homeschooled and my parents were entrepreneurs. So I ended up really working in my dad's business as I was growing up and getting directly exposed to, I guess, the mindset of figuring it out and then watching my parents grow their business while taking care of a really large family. And also just... I grew up as very much, I think, a self-teacher. So when I wasn't working with my dad, I was pretty bored at home. But boredom, I think, was good because I was pretty curious. And pre-internet, I just did a lot of reading and kind of had time to explore instead of being in the classroom. So I think those things led me to be a very, very open-minded. Well, I'm just an advocate of self-directed learning in general. And I've just been an entrepreneur my whole life. So I've been building businesses in industries from construction to cybersecurity. I ended up moving my family to the Philippines in 2014, had sold 2 construction companies in 2012, and was doing some work with a US company kind of on a consulting basis and had an opportunity to move. Well, it wasn't really presented to me. It was more like I came to the Philippines with a friend working on something and really liked the culture here. Saw mm-hmm. the economy looked like it was really kind of about I just felt like a very alive place where a lot of people wanted to learn and maybe I would be able to help more people. Also wanted my kids to see something outside the US. So I've been here in the Philippines since 2014. Mm-hmm. And I've helped a number of different businesses and entrepreneurs in the meantime and really enjoyed building my network across Southeast Asia and Australia. But about 3.5 years ago, so the end of 2018, I started Valhalla with my really close friend and business partner, who's now my business partner, a guy that I met actually in a Toastmasters club here in Cebu. He's from Seattle.
And, right.
Yeah. So we started this business because we wanted, and I'll tell you more about this later, but we both see business as a tool for solving human problems, and we mm-hmm. wanted to build something that has a long-term impact. And so that's kind of a little bit about, I guess, a synopsis of my background in business and how I ended up where I am. It's obviously missing lots of details, but that's the quick version.
Wow. Well, what so I love about doing these podcasts is you discover things about people that really surprise you. So being one of 8 children and then being homeschooled must have been chaotic, challenging, but also really exciting and never a dull moment there. And then, of course, moving from the US to the Philippines and having such a different culture and everything, and being very much a self-starter and an entrepreneur. And the name Valhalla, now I studied Vikings when I was at school, so it was a little while ago, but tell me a little bit more about where the name of your company, Valhalla, Valhalla.team, comes from.
Yeah, great question. So actually when in the end of sort of sometime in 2018, I started talking with Garrick and I said, I really want to be in business with you and your father because we have so many values aligned and we see business similarly. We have, I just don't really care what we do. I just want to be in business with you guys. And I want to be building something that impacts the planet and people. And he was already passionate about software and he was building a software company. At the time, he had started building a product. And so he had this name already. It was a name he was passionate about. And I wasn't really sold on the name right away, but then he told me the backstory. And I realized that this Valhalla is a hall of heroes in Norse mythology where these kind of fallen gods or heroes, all day long, every day, they spar or they kind of practice fight to get better. Mm-hmm. So they're always making each other better. But they've got each other's backs. And then at night, they're just bonding. So it's about camaraderie. And the name really has to do with building a culture and a tribe of people that work hard together to make each other better every day. But then, yeah. That they also really know each other and have each other's backs. And yeah, so that's why we use that name.
That's fantastic. I love it. Vikings were one of my favorite period in history. So. But I can really understand the name as well in terms of the context of your company. And one of the things that you're really passionate about, Eli, is about building products with purpose. So what does products with purpose really mean to you and to Valhalla as an organization?
Yeah, great question. Through my business career, I've built companies where a year or two in, I started getting a little bit disillusioned or bored or I don't know, just like the meaning wasn't necessarily there. Maybe more than 1 or 2 years, depends on which company. But I've eventually realized that business is so much more fun and rewarding when you feel like the problem you're solving really, really matters to you. And the way I look at what I'm trying to do now is build businesses that really do have long-term impact toward the future of the planet and humans. And there's like a lot of really important problems to solve. Obviously, that's very subjective. There's no very categorical way to decide if it has purpose that's meaningful or not. But basically, I'm not as excited about building accounting platforms as I am about building, you know, helping companies that are solving problems like, let's say, education or, you know, sustainable food, you know, things like that. So I just really want to, we've decided to build a company that supports purpose-driven organizations. And the last thing I would add on to that is that capitalism has been amazing for the planet, but we've started to assume that business exists for the purpose of making owners wealthy, and mm-hmm. shareholder supremacy is kind of taken us off track, I think, with what business can do. So, just refocusing business on the purpose of the problem we want to solve and how much do we care about it. So that's kind of what I think of when I say that phrase.
Yeah, definitely. And do you think as well, COVID's obviously come with a lot of problems, but also in some cases been a reawakening. Do you think more companies are focused on that purpose aspect now over the last year, 18 months, as a result of COVID?
Yeah, I love that question. I would say absolutely. And I think we're going to look back 10 years from now and see 2020 as a year where millions and millions and millions of people woke up and realized that they didn't want to keep doing things the same way. For example, just education, if you look at that, how many mm-hmm. parents woke up and realized, like, what are we doing this for? You know, like, it's just out of sight, out of mind, and the way it's always been. But now we really, so many more people. And it doesn't mean it's going to change overnight, right? But I do see, you know, to answer your question more directly, I do see a huge trend. And maybe it's because it's the area I'm focusing on, but I'm just surprised at how many people I see that are genuinely in business because they're passionate about solving a problem, and that they make decisions that prioritize that. They prioritize the people that they're serving, and they're not really there for the money they're trying to make for themselves. And I think also it's exciting to see younger people are truly voting with their dollars. And it's like there may be two products in front of you, and maybe they're pretty similar, but you're going to go with the one that where you know the company's actual heart, and you know what they're in business for, and you know their story, and you know it's not just made up. So I think we're headed in a direction that's really good. And I do think it's accelerated lately.
Yeah, definitely. And I think I do quite a lot with startups and scale-ups, tech startups and scale-ups. And many of those are focused on a purpose, whether it be for social, environmental, etc. But it seems even the larger companies are being more focused on not just profit, but also purpose as well, which is really great for society and the environment as a whole. And Eli, you talk a lot about your values. What would you say your main values are, and how do they really drive Valhalla?
Good question. That's not something I spent a lot of time thinking about early on in my life and career, but throughout my 30s, I was focusing a lot more on kind of who I really wanted to become, and I'm reinventing myself intentionally over and over again, and business especially. I started realizing that without a well thought through values hierarchy, it's really hard to make decisions. And if you're partnered with people where you don't have those similar values. So personally, I'll just tell you a couple of my top values I've chosen for myself as a human. One of them is to be constantly growing. So never ending improvement, just like, you know, I don't think any human has ever reached their potential. And we don't know what the cap of human potential is, right? So what's more fun than seeing how you can pursue knowing yourself better, expanding your ability to learn and grow, and then for the purpose of helping as many people as you can. So not just growing to see how good can I be, but how much can I, you know, who can I become that will help other people? And the second value for me would be, it might even be the first, because it underpins the first one, which is always open to change. It's like the universe. If there's one thing we know for sure that's a constant, it's change. And we, as humans, kind of get stuck on thinking things should be a certain way. And that's just, so I think that I never want to be rigid in my beliefs. I never want to be stuck or overly certain. So those are my personal values. But then in business, I would say my top two are, if you're going to be in business, look at it as what it is. And I see it as a tool to solve problems. Fundamentally, that's what it just is. And I want to be in business to solve problems for people, but I want to be making people's lives better all along the way. So that really has to start with the people that you work with. And I want to always be getting better in creating better experiences for the people that are part of the businesses that I create.
Fantastic. I love your values. They really, really resonate with me as well, which I think is how we end up talking to each other and ended up on this podcast. So that's fabulous. Thanks, Eli. And what do you think is the key to building a really great tech business?
There are obviously many keys, but if you ask me to name the key, I would say that it's a depth of understanding where you should never stop seeking to make it better, because you can never finish and it's always evolving. But more deeply you understand who is your target market, understanding them better and really understanding the problem. So that will just lead to decisions that are better in solve. And it's if I had to focus on just one thing, it would be, don't get distracted on all the tactical things. Don't get distracted in figuring out obviously you have to do them all. You have to build a great sales process. You got to build a team. You've got to build you've got to obviously build your product, and you have to build a tech team, and you have to build processes, and all these things are vital. But if they're not driven by a ultra committed focus on the problem and making sure that you really, really know who it is you saw that you're serving. And the more you can niche down, the better you'll be able to understand the specific problem for the specific person. And if you solve that really well, you'll have avid followers. You'll have people that really care about what you're doing, and you can always expand from there. But if you had to say what is the thing, I think that's the obvious answer.
So really narrowing down your customers and the people you're serving and the problem itself, and really niching there rather than trying to serve absolutely everybody. Awesome. And what do you consider to be the most important elements when building a software product?
That's something we've been studying for the last couple of years. We started out serving a lot of different companies, and then we started to niche down more focused on purpose-driven companies and like really ed tech and a couple of other industries we love to work in. But we studied the history that we had access to and all the examples through our clients and other examples, other case studies, and we realized like the commonalities either pointed to success or fail or struggle, maybe even failure, came down to just some very simple pillars. And one of them is constant clarity on your product roadmap, which again needs to be driven by a constant flow of customer data. So you've got to have this pipeline of information coming from your market that is always, always informing your product roadmap. And you need to have some kind of product ownership, the product manager, product owner, someone who has enough time and energy and good systems for taking all that customer data and using it to prioritize what you build next. Because no matter how good your tech team is and no matter how good your processes of project management are, if you're not feeding the right next features, if you're not feeding the right order of what to build for the right for your customers, then you'll end up 2 years down the road with just a lot of disappointment and frustration. So it's product roadmap fed by customer feedback and data and market data. And then team composition obviously is vital. You've got to have people that are thriving, that they know you, they know your vision, your passion. I think this is actually possible with remote teams as well, but there are ways to build that and ways not to. I think contracting development to an outside firm can be really problematic because the people working on your product don't really know you. They don't know your vision. They're not really your team. So you don't have this continuity over a long period of time. I think it's really vital to get that core team really right, obviously. And then as you need certain other technical capacities over time, you can fill those pieces in on a temporary basis, perhaps. But I really do think that core team needs to be your heart and soul. And then lastly, I would just say processes. Just it's project management, collaboration as we work in a remote world. It's like making sure that you've got communication cadences and methodologies that really make sure people are heading fast in the right direction.
Yeah, definitely. And obviously, there's a lot more since COVID again focused on remote teams. Mm-hmm. What is your advice to grow and nurture really high performance remote teams?
So step one, so we actually we've built out over the last year an accelerator, a very lightweight accelerator program called High Performance Product Evolution, which is designed to help our clients be confident that they're directionally correct with their product. So I think that's actually step one is make sure that those things that I just mentioned, those pillars are really lined up. Mm-hmm. We are seeing that having a third party assisting you to just take a look at these things periodically is really, really important because it's hard to see yourself from an outside perspective. It's hard to, you kind of get lost in the trenches sometimes. So the methods of building a remote team, first of all, I wouldn't worry about that until you've got these things kind of checked off. But then when you are in the process of building a team, I would say get some outside perspective to see, if you're really looking at the right next hires. And then also be thinking 6 months down the road, a year down the road, like what does your product roadmap say that you're going to be looking for? Because finding great people these days in, that are the right fit really takes time. And your question again was on
high performance teams that are remote. So I think in terms of nurturing, it's more difficult when they're remote, or what do you do to make them high performance?
So I think the whole world is working on figuring this out right now. And I don't know that anyone has mastered it, and the world will change as we're trying to master it. So always be looking for new ideas from other people and inventing, looking at problems. But the first thing I think you've got to be working on is genuine awareness of how people are doing. It's like, and this is not easy, right? Because people don't automatically share these things, and cold digital surveys probably don't work. You've got to have some systems of making sure that people in your company are that you know how they're doing. Like, how are they doing emotionally? How are they doing in their physically, their personal lives? Like, it's not just about output and performance. And I think this requires a lot more intentionality now. When you're not in the office together, it could happen well in an office, sometimes a little bit less intentionally because you're just incidentally in the same space. And if, you know, if people enjoy working together and you have, you know, have get-togethers and parties and things like that, or workshops in person, you just have this easier time knowing how people are doing and building each other up with energy. So I think we have to get more creative in creating events and conversations and opportunity to know how people are doing, connect. And as new people join the team, like, what are you proactively doing to make sure that people get to know each other on a one-on-one basis? Yeah, I think it does need systems for these things. Even though they're human things, we need systems to make sure they happen.
So going back and focusing very much on the people rather than, you know, what motivates them, if they're having a good day or a bad day, what's going on in their personal life, so they're not just there necessarily to do a job as such. Go deeper than that, would you say?
That's my choice. I think it's much more rewarding. I'm not saying, I sometimes question how are we doing in this, but my genuine desire is that people are thriving, and it's not really directly related to their productivity or their output. It's not about how can I get them to work better. It's more like, just like, I want the people that are part of my organization to be happy and love it here. Yes. You know? So yeah, that's what I would recommend.
Absolutely. And I love how you brought in thrive with the don't just survive, thrive theme of the podcast. So Eli, what would you say, coming back to you, have been the main highlights of your career so far?
I've gotten a lot of experiences in different arenas by saying yes to weird things and kind of things that other people might not tend to say yes to. And it, for me, it comes down to realizing that the things we're afraid of in life, well, the things that we tend to move away from because they're unknown or they're scary, is really where all the growth is. And you get so much perspective when you just do new things. I'm writing a book called Scary Equals Happy, which is just designed to help people focus on the fact that every time there's a scary conversation or something you just tend to move away from, if you just move toward it, assuming it's not a gun or, you know, a lion, then it's probably the best thing you could do. And I've just done a lot of that really intentionally. I've done a lot of like, okay, that makes me uncomfortable, like salsa dancing, you know, or just anything that I find that makes me uncomfortable, which is harder and harder to do, but I just have a principle or philosophy of doing it. And
yes.
Constant reinvention, I think, through that process and trying to figure out who do I want to be next, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like you only regret what you don't do rather than what you do, so to speak.
If I can add one more thing on that, as I've evaluated people's success paths and like the people whose journeys I look at and I'm like, okay, I really want to learn from this person. I love who they've become or where they've gotten to in life. It seems to me that a little bit more of a generalist philosophy early in life is really smart, because then you get more perspective. You get a broader, more comprehensive mental map of the world. But then, you know, you might find later that you need to niche down or focus on a passion so that you can apply who you've become to something meaningful. And so I'm becoming, like, I'm saying no more often now, and I'm trying to become more intentional about the impact I want to have because I believe I can now. But I'm really glad that I've just done so many different things all over the place rather than just laser focused on a specialty when I was in my 20s. So I'm glad that I've done that.
Yeah, definitely. And variety is the spice of life, as they say. And Eli, what would you say over the years have been your main challenges?
The first I would say was, well, maybe growing up in the US, the mindset is you don't look at the rest of the world very much. It's like you just know about your world and you don't realize that it's not the world. And I'm really excited. I mean, I'm really grateful for the fact that when I was 19, I got to go to Japan for 3 months and help build a house, which is another story for another day. But that, I think, gave me a ton of realization that the US culture isn't the only thing out there. And yet I still went through the decade of my 20s just focusing on the usual pursuits. I built a business, I bought a house, I had, you know, I had the cars, I had the dogs, I had the kids, I had the property, blah, 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 blah. And I realized in my early 30s, like, I just went through this decade focusing on doing and having, but not at all on who I'm becoming. And I wasn't focused at all on understanding myself, trying to figure out how I could be a better version of me, what that even looks like, how to do it. No idea. So I think the biggest challenge was like, I wasn't growing me. And I think I made a lot of big mistakes in business because I was a jerk, to be honest. And I thought I was smarter than other people. And I didn't know how to get people on board with my vision because I just didn't have enough EQ at the time, I think. The second big pillar of challenge has been, it took me a long time to realize that values alignment is critical in partnerships. You can't build a business just based on wanting the same output, the same vision. You have to really see the world. You got to have some key values truly aligned. And it's really hard to see those things in partnerships in the beginning.
Definitely. And it's quite interesting with your first aspects about that from an ego EQ perspective. I've had a few American guys on this podcast and they've said very similar things, that to get rid of the ego. And then, of course, you need to get to the end outcome result about having the same values, having the vision, etc. And Eli, what do you think is the real secret behind your success?
I've got to at least pick on the word success for a second before I answer that question. And I don't know that I would necessarily say that I feel quote unquote successful, other than I do feel like I've learned how to build habits, mm-hmm. and I've learned how to maintain my energy. I've learned how to improve myself. And I would say that I've learned how to be more present and enjoy life in general instead of being so future focused. So I think I'm impacting other people to some degree. I think I've learned that humans need progress and humans need contribution. We need a lot of other things, but I think we really need those things to be happy. And I feel like I'm generally doing reasonably well on those two things and trying to improve. So the secret to getting to the place where I can feel that way has just been openness to change and openness to new data. It's like new experiences, new data. And when I realize I need to change a belief or change a philosophy or change a habit, like I'm just willing to do the work to do it. So I would say that's bottom line, openness to change.
Openness to change. That's great. I love it. And you're still kind of a work in progress, so to speak. And one of the other things I think you mentioned was about constantly learning. And you're a really avid learner from talking to you. And when I read some of the things that you post on LinkedIn, for example. So Eli, what are you currently reading, listening to, and watching at the moment?
So if you had asked me this in 2019 or maybe middle of 2020, I would have listed off a bunch of books because I went on a reading spree and I read 50 books in 19, wow. 60 in 2020. But I've been really focusing on creating content and writing and turning myself into someone who shares a little bit more of what I know this year. So I've been reading less and I've been leaning more on podcasts lately. A couple of the big ones I really love would be, I think Jordan Peterson is a fascinating thinker. Sam mm-hmm. Harris is quite interesting. I love Impact Theory with Tom Bilyeu. It's been one of the, like, a super nexus of learning for me. Michael Gervais, I really like his podcast. Gaining Mastery or Finding Mastery? Love that podcast. And also just trying to learn from peers, you know, people like listening to your podcast or just a lot of other people that I know personally who are having amazing conversations. So I'm a little bit random these days in, I guess, synthesizing information from all over the place, but just trying to keep data coming in. I'm trying to learn how to become good at these things, online conversations and social media. It's valuable to get to learn how to have a platform. I think if you have something useful to say, it really is a challenging thing to learn. And I think that's what I'm focusing on learning right now, is how to be a little bit more visible in the world.
Yes. And again, coming back to that openness to learning, whether it's something you read, you listen to, you watch, or just being out in the world, seeing different people and what they're doing and how they're doing things. So that's brilliant. Well, thank you so much for sharing your insights, Eli. Is there anything else that you'd like to share at all?
I really appreciate you inviting me and taking the time. And it's been fun. Thank you. Good questions.
My pleasure. Well, thank you very much for being involved. And thank you.
Thank you too.
I hope that you enjoyed this episode. Please remember to subscribe, rate, and review. If you're looking for career advice, your next career opportunity, or to grow your tech team, then please call me, Nicola Steele, on 0499 773 546, or go to our website, jjptalent.com.au. The Don't Just Survive, Thrive podcast is part of the Spotlight series, which includes the YouTube channel, Spotlight on Software Development. If you want more insights into the software industry, particularly tech startups, then subscribe to the Spotlight on Software Development YouTube channel. Thank you for listening. Until next time.